big sound in a small town, far away from the big city lights, making music every night. Good music with all our friends. Tell everybody, tell your mama and them. We're going out and we're getting down. A big sound in a small town. A big sound in a small town. A big sound in a small town. A big sound in a small town.
Hi, welcome to Season 4 of Big Sound Small Town. I'm your host, Sandy Carlton. Join me as musicians tell their stories about how they became musicians and the stories along the way.
Yeah. everybody. This is Tommy Smith, guitar player for Dirty Grass Soul, hanging out up here at the Earl Scruggs Center in downtown Shelby with my buddy Sandy Carlton.
Hey, Tommy, it's good to have you here, buddy.
Kind of sound like there for a minute I was going to host this thing.
It did. You're welcome to host. You know, sometimes I need a co-host.
Well, I'm your man. I
hear you.
I like to talk.
Yeah, I'm finding that out, you know. So, and the bad thing is, you know, I do too. I mean, I wouldn't have a podcast if I didn't like to talk.
I see it. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we've already been up here cutting rug for like 2 hours.
Oh, we have. Oh, yeah. We've told y'all missed the good stuff. You're going to get the stuff now that, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. It's going to be a whole different deal now.
We're toning it down now.
Yeah, we're toning it down. I don't know where we're going to start this. Where you want to start this at?
Dude, I don't know. What you want? What do you want to know?
You have always been a guitar player?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the only instrument I've ever played. Or let me say it's the only instrument I've ever attempted to play. I actually had a neighbor across the street in junior high school that me and him wanted to play guitar. We got this big crazy, you know, thought in our head we were going to have a band. And he actually got a guitar, and we started, you know, messing with that thing, and we didn't know what we were doing, but we started messing with it. I was like 12 at the time, and he went off to Florida to spend the summer with his daddy, and he ended up getting killed in a car wreck.
No, that's terrible.
Yeah, it was a really bad, you know, time. And then like a few weeks after that, I had an accident, got hit by a truck riding a bicycle that same summer. Like, these two things happened
within
a couple of weeks. And so I couldn't walk for about a year and a half, and didn't know if I'd ever walk again. And so my mama and my daddy had been separated and divorced for a couple years, and my mama actually took her wedding rings and traded them for me a guitar.
Wow.
And I'd have something to do because I couldn't walk. I couldn't get up and move around. And that was in 1986. She got me that guitar. It was an Area Pro 2 Strat copy.
Yeah.
And my uncle had took pinstriping like you do on a car.
Yeah.
And made like the Eddie Van Halen stuff all
sure,
over.
Yeah.
And I sat around and beat on that thing for years.
Do you have an amp?
You know, the crazy thing is my mama got me that guitar. And the next year, she bought me a 1978 Marshall 100 watt master volume head. Okay.
Yeah.
And she said, son, I don't have the money to buy a cabinet for it. You need to go talk to your daddy about getting you the cabinet for it. So I went to my daddy and I said, daddy, mom, you know, mama got me this amp. I got a guitar. I need a cabinet. And my daddy, being the old super conservative, you know, hardcore, rough and tough Vietnam guy, you know, he said, I ain't wasting no money on that. That ain't nothing but a fad. I ain't doing that. So he wouldn't get me one. So the next year, I blowed up every speaker and stereo or everything I could find for the whole next year. And my mama bought me the next Christmas a Marshall, like a 1969 Marshall 810 cabinet. And I terrorized the entire neighborhood for years with that thing, man. I mean, I'm telling you what, I'd raise the windows in my house, and all my buddies would come over, and we'd crank that thing up and play Metallica and AC/DC and Led Zeppelin and, you know, just terrorize the neighborhood. But, yeah, my mama, she's actually in the hospital right now in Charlotte. She just had another major surgery. But she has been probably my biggest fan my whole entire life. I probably wouldn't be doing anything like what I'm doing now if it hadn't been for her.
I think as a musician, parental support is pretty big.
Yeah.
You know, if your parents aren't really too much about you playing, you're going to have a struggle to do it all your life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's, you know.
And my daddy, God rest his soul, you know, he passed away in January 2018. And he was, you know, just a rough and tough old biker, you know, hardcore redneck guy, you know, from hell. Excuse my French. But I know my daddy loved me, and he was proud of me and all that. But, you know, he had a funny way of showing it.
Yeah, I understand that.
And but my mama has always been the rock, you know, for all of us. Still to this day, our whole entire family, she's the one that always kind of picks you up and pats you on the butt and said, keep going, you know. And so that's pretty awesome.
Well, then so you got this guitar and you're playing and all, but so at some point did you say, I got to let people hear this other than in the house? I mean, did you put together a band, or how'd that happen?
Yeah, well, I started, you know, playing like in junior high school, like I said, and just got to where I could pick up, you know, a little Led Zeppelin riff or Metallica riff, and you know, and then you get like buddies that come over and they go, man, Tommy can play some Metallica.
Right.
Or he can play some Led Zeppelin. So that little crowd just kind of starts to grow a little bit, yeah, of people hanging around wanting to, right, hear you play and all. And then there was some guys from Lincoln, Ricky Tackett and Kendall Davis and couple of those guys had a band in Lincoln. They put an ad in the paper. They needed a rhythm guitar player slash singer. So I thought I had gotten pretty good, you know, enough to where I could play some things, and I was ready to, you know, go to another level playing, sure, a band. So I answered this ad and called them up, and I went to downtown Lincoln to their practice building and did an audition. And I said, what you want me to do? They said, well, play us and sing us something. Well, you know, I was kind of like, I knew I couldn't sing. So anyhow, I played and sang Freebird.
Oh, okay.
And after it was all over with, they all had their girlfriends and stuff in there in the band room and all. And they said, well, we're going to go outside and talk a little bit, and we'll come back in and tell you what we think. I said, all right, cool. So I'm sitting in there like twiddling my thumbs. I hear them outside. They're talking and laughing and cutting up and all. A little bit later here, they all come back in, and they all sit down real serious. And Kendall Davis, I don't know if you know him or not, he's a phenomenal drummer. Kendall says, well, we got some good news, we got some bad news, Tommy. And I said, well, what's the good news? And he said, well, the good news is you're in the band. I was like, sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what's the bad news? He said, you don't get a microphone.
I mean,
to this day, they won't let me sing.
obviously, you play well enough to where you don't have to sing.
Well, you know, I'm one of those guys that I love to play, but I picked up a guitar because, you know, I didn't have anything else to do, and then I realized that chicks dug guitar players, it was like that whole thing. So I never, like, learned how to read music. I don't know much about music theory. You know, sometimes I play guitar like I'm falling down a flight of steps, you know. And I mean, Jimmy Page is my probably biggest hero.
A bad one to have, you know? Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where I've always wanted and to play with people in bands where I felt like I was the weakest link.
Oh, that's well, you should always do that.
Then
yeah.
I've got something to strive for. You do. You know? And with these guys, Dirty Grass Soul, I mean, everybody in the band is, you know, just incredible guys and musicians, and they push me all the time. I mean, it's like I'm constantly, you know, trying to up my game a little bit here and there, because they'll do something, you know. I mean, you just see Lance playing, you're just like, gosh.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chris, you know, just killing that banjo. And
right.
Glenn, with all that pedal steel stuff he does, was just phenomenal. Jared, you know, the absolute king of the train beat. I
sure.
mean, nobody
can
beat
yeah.
that. And, of course, Kevin, you know, anything Kevin picks up.
Sure.
The fiddle, the acoustic guitar, electric guitar, he plays the crap out of the harmonica, and just a great bunch of guys. I have been extremely blessed with the opportunity to play with them, really, to be honest with you.
But you had to get yourself somewhere there before you got to play with them. I mean, take that story along from.
I started, you know, playing with first. It was called a band called First Defense back in the day, with Kendall and Ricky Tackett and Ronnie Urey and Brian Urey and Darren Gates, this was like, you know, late '80s, early '90s. It was like hair metal stuff. You know, we played all around on the Charlotte scene with, you know, all these other bands. Some of them, you know, Firehouse,
sure,
a lot of those guys, and of course then grunge came along and kind of wiped all that out. So we kind of, you know, moved over into that new phase or whatever, and started writing stuff and put a band together called Pocket Size Grandma. We released a CD back in the 90s and did that whole thing, the whole Pearl Jam, you know, Nirvana, all of that. And then that kind of progressed into the new metal phase of Limp Bizkit and Korn and, you know, all that stuff of the late 90s and early 2000s. And I played in a band called Grudge. We released a four-song EP and toured all over the place then. We started a band called the King Bizkit Trio, some buddies of mine, me and Chris Phillips and Eric Bider. We did that for probably 15 years, King Bizkit Trio up around the Hickory area. And we played mostly covers of, you know, Zeppelin and all this kind of stuff for years and got a pretty good following and did that for a long time. And then probably about 2009 or 2010, somewhere along in that area, Benton Blunt had a record deal, put out his record, done all that kind of stuff, and then the record company folded and a bunch of stuff happened with that. He ended up moving back to the Carolinas and put together a band of musicians locally and started doing some shows. And Okie Parsons, phenomenal drummer, got Eric Bider, our bass player, to go play with them for a little while. And then they needed another guitar player, so they called me, and I went and played with them for a little bit. And then Okie left, and we brought in Chris Phillips. King Bizkit Trio basically became Benton Blunt's
band. Okay, gotcha.
And I did that all the way up until about 5 years ago. And we did a show at the Clear Mountain Music Festival.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that I saw Dirty Grass Soul.
Okay.
And when I saw those guys, they had Stuart McConnell filling in on guitar for them that particular night.
Yeah.
And I saw that band, and I was like just completely blown away. I was like, holy cow, these dudes are.
And that's totally different than what you were doing, really. Kind of totally different.
The funny thing is that I've always been a rock and roll guy. I've always been a pentatonic scale, southern rock kind of guitar player. You know, a little rough around the edges. I'm not real pretty about playing or anything like that. Just a, you know, rough and tough old southern guitar kind of guy. And so when I first started playing with Benton, I didn't have a clue about country music at all. My grandpa played on the Grand Ole Opry and traveled and toured and done all that stuff back in the 40s and 50s and all. But I never really got into that. Bluegrass and all that stuff was very intimidating to me because those are some of the finest pickers on the planet.
I agree.
And I am not that scale of guy. So I stuck with my rock and roll. When I started playing with Benton, I started, you know, talking to some of the musicians, and I said, I don't know nothing about no country music.
Right.
I'm a pentatonic scale kind of guy.
Yeah.
And one day, one of the other guitar players said, well, son, said, you know how to play a pentatonic scale? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, you're used to playing a minor pentatonic scale. And I said, yeah. And he said, move that down 3 frets, and now you're playing a major pentatonic scale. So do all the same licks and everything you were doing in that minor scale. Now you're doing it in the major scale. And there you got your country music. And something as just as simple as that just completely changed my whole outlook on all of that. And I was like, holy cow, this is insane. So still to this day, I'm primarily a pentatonic scale guy, and I've tried to learn a little bit more of mixing the minors and pentatonic, and your major third and your minor thirds and all that kind of stuff, and doing all that kind of deal. But with Dirty Grass Soul, we cover so much ground that I get to do a little bit of about everything.
Sure, you do. I mean, y'all do a lot.
Yeah, so I'm not like a one, you know, genre kind of guy. I get to dabble around in about everything. So I'm not like super good at any one particular thing.
I'm pretty decent at all of them. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. You know, I mean, that's kind of how you get to be good is you can do a lot of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a lot of fun. I mean, that's the whole thing with Dirty Grass Soul is, you know, I'm a big Gibson guy. I'm a Gibson Les Paul guy. I love my Gibson.
Yeah, I've seen you with them.
I love my old Blackface Fender amps, mm-hmm. you know, old Marshalls and stuff like that. And you know, so and I've always carried a Les Paul and a Tele with me, but I primarily love my Les Pauls more than anything. So, and of course, you know, you can get a Tele to pretty much do about anything you want.
You can. I agree. Most versatile guitar in the world.
Yeah, and so it's tough sometimes, you know, dialing in tones and getting sounds to cover, you know, every genre there is.
Well,
you know,
I mean, your tones are good. So, I mean, sometimes people can play really well, but their tones lack something. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of players that play really well, but their tone stinks.
Well, I've always been a tube amp guy.
Yeah.
And I've got a whole collection of mid-60s Blackface Fender amps that just, to me, sound better than anything.
They do. I'm not going to argue that with you much.
So now we've, you know, Dirty Grass, so we've all moved to in-ear monitors.
Right.
We don't have any amps on stage.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin's using like a Helix Stomp, and Glenn's using a Quilter, and Jared's direct, and Chris is running direct, and I'm running a Kemper. I've got a Kemper stage profiler. And so profiled a bunch of those Blackface Fender amps and stuff and trying to dial that in. And that's kind of a cool thing with the Kemper is that I can, you know, hit one little button, and now I'm playing a 67 Pro Reverb.
Right.
Well, I can hit another button, and now I'm playing a 78 Marshall Master Volume Marshall or, you know, whatever else in between there. I can kind of get anything that I want. And, you know, for the most part, nobody in the crowd ever knows the difference because
those
profiles are actually from that particular amp.
So right.
That's pretty cool. It's kind of hard to get used to with the whole in-ear thing.
I was getting ready to ask you. That was where my next question was going. Man. No amp on stage. So what do you get running? Just personally, what do you get running to your in-ears?
So I have the whole band in my ears, and so I, you know, everything's run direct, and then Jared's got a X-Air 32 that we run everything into, and then we're using Sennheiser G4 wireless in-ear packs and all. I just recently got a set of Ultimate Ears UE Pro 7s that I had custom made for me and all that. And we all have an app on our phone that I can run my in-ear monitor mix from my phone. Actually, I got me a little iPad mini now
right.
that I run it from. So I can mix my own ears, you know.
So you can mix your own ears. You're not, that's pretty cool. I mean, see, that's one of my things about who's going to mix my ear and how long is it going to take. And I know how bands are. It starts out one way and doesn't always end that way. You know,
yeah.
I mean.
And so. This is cool because, you know, everything's consistent now. We have an in-ear monitor rack. When we roll up at a venue or whatever, which, you know, now we're self-contained. We've got lights. We've got PA. We've got everything on the trailer that we need. So we can do the whole deal ourselves. Or, you know, if we roll up somewhere that's got a house PA, like tonight at Greenville, Harley-Davidson in Greenville, we'll be doing that. We'll wheel in our monitor rack on the stage, and they'll plug into that and for the front of the house, and then our, you know, in-ear mix will be exactly the same as it was last week or,
right.
you know, a month ago or
yeah,
whatever. Now
that's
I might
good.
Do a little tweaking
sure.
for, you know, drum mics or whatever, you know, if it's an inside venue or outside venue, I might tweak a few things, but I think the biggest thing to deal with the in-ear monitors is having ambient mics on the front of the stage. We put out two ambient mics on the front of the stage, and so I can put my ears in, and it literally sounds like I'm just in the room. You know, I can
That's
hear the
good.
Crowd, I can hear, you know, everything going around us, but I can hear each individual instrument no matter which way I turn my head or if I walk over here or walk over there. Everything stays consistent.
No, that's good.
And
yeah,
I keep, like Glenn is I got him panned over to my left because that's where he is typically on stage. I got, you know, everybody panned as to where they
it's
are
where they're
stage.
On stage.
Yeah.
So that keeps it in perspective too.
It
I
feels
guess it,
right.
Yeah, it feels right. Yeah,
and I don't feel so much like I'm in a box.
Yeah,
now, that's the biggest thing with the in-ears is sometimes you just feel closed off to everybody.
Well, I mean, kind of you are because the interaction is not quite the same as it used to be.
Yep.
I mean, that is one of the trade-offs. The magic of two people standing there doing that
mm-hmm.
with your amps and all, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. And, you know, typically back in the day, you know, if you were running a wireless and I was going to run across the stage and jam with Lance
right.
in the middle of a song or something, well, now I can't hear my amp because I'm over across the stage.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So now if I do that, well,
you can hear the whole thing, yeah,
and,
which is the trade-off you used to have with that. Yeah, you go over there and you can't hear your amp.
And our stage, you know, there's no stage volume.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, so the front of the house guy is like, shoot, I love this. You know.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
Kicks now, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. As opposed to, like, in the day, it used to be, you know, everybody's turning up as the night goes along because you can't hear.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
And by the end of the night, the front of house guy is just shaking his head like there ain't nothing else I can
do. I mean, so how'd you guys figure out? Somebody show you this? I mean, sound man figure this out?
The in-ear thing?
Yeah.
Well, we just finally got to a point to where our stage volume was just ridiculous.
Yeah, y'all loud band, no doubt.
Kevin, he's singing. He's playing fiddle, he's playing acoustic guitar, he's playing electric guitar, and he was relying on the monitors to hear all of that.
Right.
You know? And so, Kevin would consistently, like, I got to turn this up, I got to turn this up, I got to turn this up. And every time he turned his stuff up, we got to turn ours up too. So it just finally got to a point where we're like, we got to make some changes. And so we had talked about doing in-ears for a while, and during the COVID whole shutdown, we kind of took that opportunity to revamp, our whole stage volume issue, and we bit the dirt, and everybody pulled out their Sweetwater credit card.
Right. Yeah.
We bought what we needed to buy.
Had to get the candy. Had to get the candy coming.
No interest. You know what I mean?
Yep. Have to get the candy coming with your Sweetwater.
Yeah. Exactly. And so we did that, and it's taken us some time to adjust to it. But it is definitely better on our ears. It's better, for the crowd up front. It's better for the front of house guy. And I think everything's a lot more crisp and can be heard a whole lot better.
Yeah, because you guys are a loud band. I mean, you're – and that's a good thing. I mean, what you guys play, you need to play it loud.
Yeah, we do. There's so much energy. And a lot of stuff that we do
there is.
And it goes from, it's very dynamic. Some songs we do that's like way down here, and then some of the stuff is blasting wide open. And of course, we go from, Hank Williams Sr. to Charlie Daniels Band to, of course, a bunch of our own originals.
Yeah.
Home Is on the Highway and Cowboy. Those two songs alone are, two totally.
Totally different. Yeah, they are. Right there, Yeah. Well, you guys just had the big double CD drop too.
Yes, we did. We sold out the Don Gibson Theater right here in downtown Shelby back in February. It was actually the 10th anniversary of Dirty Grass Soul being a band. And Kevin and Lance, did that, and it's just grown over the years. And so we sold out the Don Gibson Theater. It was a phenomenal night. We had Aaron Meyer,
I know Aaron, great guy.
Yeah, Aaron's awesome, and all those guys came out. We recorded the show and did the double CD, and that just came out a few weeks ago. There are plans of doing a double vinyl album.
I heard that
later in the year, and possibly a DVD because we've got a lot of that on film too.
All right.
And we did that, and so it's pretty cool. And, things look really good. I mean, in 2019, we played on a cruise, the country cruise, with Ronnie Millsaps and a bunch of big, artists. And I think there was about 32 bands on the boat. And so we did that. We got a pretty good bit of momentum off of that. And then we did we hooked up with Brian Cruz of Cruiser Entertainment out of Nashville. Brian got us on a Southeast Festival Association's showcase in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. We went and did that. Within minutes of coming off the stage from that, Brian was getting messages left and right, people wanting to book us for festivals and
That's
stuff
great.
Like that all across Southeast. That was in February of 2020. At the end of February,
right.
And bam, March of 2020 hit and wiped out
every single
thing we had on the books,
exactly.
And just killed the momentum that we had going.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took all that time. We did some live things and revamped our sound with the in-ears, and we really worked on some stuff, wrote some new songs and did some of that. And then you know, slowly have been building it back, but momentum has been really good lately. You know, we're playing this Saturday, we're playing with Hank Williams Jr.
Ah, that's great.
Sammy Kershaw, Cadillac 3, several other artists at Heritage Park Amphitheater in Simpsonville, South Carolina. So we got some pretty cool stuff like that coming up, and we're playing a lot. We've kind of upped our game on, you know, the venues that we're playing and things like that.
You're even traveling farther, aren't you?
We've been to Kansas City and just a lot of cool things. We're doing Josh, Moonshiner Josh, you know,
yeah.
Josh
Holmes. Yeah, I do, yeah.
His birthday party coming up, Outlaw Revival, and a bunch of cool stuff like that. So the momentum is there. The crowds are getting bigger. The shows are more and more people are coming. We did the Mighty Move Festival this past week. We did Taylorsville, North Carolina this past week. The crowds are huge. You know, people are really coming out to see us, and we're very blessed.
Plus, you guys are about to be the king of Suck, Bang, Blow.
We love Suck, Bang, Blow.
I mean,
we really do love going down there and play. That's a rowdy.
Yeah, that's a rowdy play. Yes, it is.
Fun. Yeah.
Are you guys booking this stuff yourself now, or you got somebody?
I
didn't know what happened after that. If y'all have gone after the COVID, I didn't know if y'all. Yeah.
Well, Brian from Cruiser Entertainment, you know, we worked with him for quite a while, and Brian's a good guy and does really good work and all of that. You know, but we had built a pretty good following in the Southeast, especially on our own, over the past, you know, I've been a band 5 years. And so Kevin, you know, has done a lot of the booking for the band, most of the booking.
Right. pardon me.
And so we've kind of taken it back, you know, primarily into our own hands with Kevin doing right. most of that. And but Brian, we do still do work with Brian some. And good friends with him and all of that, and but we're pretty self-contained.
That's good. I mean, that's good.
I mean, we're kind of, you know, that blue collar mentality kind of thing. Like you know, we're not big on moving to Nashville and doing that whole thing or jumping into that game. I don't know that, you know, we're not really big on, you know, we want to take over the world and sell out arenas or anything like that. We're just a bunch of country boys.
You just wanting to make a living playing music.
We love to play with each other.
Yeah.
You know, of course we bicker and have little quarrels within the band.
That's a band.
Yeah. But we're family, you know, yeah. We're all family.
Yeah.
We love each other. We love each other's families. And we look after one another and that kind of thing. And we're pretty successful at doing it the way we're doing it now. And, you know, my daddy always said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I think that we're doing pretty good with where we are right now and pretty much handling everything ourselves at the moment. Now, you know, of course, there may come a day where we need something else, and we'll take a look at it. When
right,
there,
yeah, exactly. Know? Cross that bridge when it gets
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I mean,
but we've got, you know, merchandise is great. We sell a ton of merch.
Well, merch is the lifeblood these days, pretty much.
And
I mean,
merchandise has covered videos and recordings,
sure.
And you know, merchandise has done a lot for us and our fan base. We don't really say we have fans; we have family. You know,
right.
these people come. You know, they work hard for their money, just like everybody else does, and they spend their time and effort and money to come see us play. And buy merchandise and support us, and we are extremely grateful for everybody that does that. But they're not fans; they're family.
Yeah, that's
and
good. I mean, that's
have
a good
met
way.
Some of the best people on the planet that I mean, that come to our house, you know, at cookouts and birthday parties, and you know, that kind of thing. Is that these people have literally become family to us?
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that's pretty hard to establish anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
And these days it's hard to get a pretty loyal, even build a real big loyal fan base because it's just a hard thing to do. So y'all
yeah.
are pretty lucky that way.
We're very lucky. We're extremely fortunate. You know, back in the day, you know, everybody was out for a record deal.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing. You always are fighting
sure.
and scraping and scrounging to get a record deal. And, you know, you have bands like, you know, Blackberry Smoke and
yeah.
you know, Tyler Childers and Cody Jinks and, you know, a lot of bands like that, Steel Woods and a lot of that type of stuff, where they went out and just beat the roads to death and built up their own thing and did a lot of that on their own without big money backing up and doing all that. And so that is possible, you know, and with the internet and all that nowadays with social media and all the different ways bands.
We're
not going out and stapling posters on telephone poles anymore.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, I live that life. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Me too.
And, oh, yeah.
So now, you know, you can post something online and spread that all over the world. And,
yeah, you can.
So that's helped a whole lot as well. And we try to have a really good social media presence and individually and as a band.
You guys are pretty personable too. That helps. I mean, pretty much top to bottom, you guys are easy to talk with that helps too. I mean, I think, and I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but the common hardworking people can relate to you guys.
Well, that's what we are.
You know, I mean, you know, I don't mean that in any way, but the best of ways, you know?
I mean, we're still, you know, regular old guys. You know, Glenn works, and Jared has a printing business with his wife and family. Kevin and Chris are farm boys through and through. And, you know, you probably go within a couple miles of where we're sitting right now, and Chris is plowing or, you know, cutting hay or getting hay up somewhere, and Kevin is helping him or building a fence,
you know, somewhere,
doing something with the cows. You know, Lance is probably right over the road here working on a car interior with what he does, you know. And me and Jenny, my wife, we have a reupholstery shop in our backyard in Lincolnton. And so we all still work, you know, and do that whole blue-collar thing. You know, we're all still regular, normal folk.
Sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of that these days that you used to not have. I mean, I think there used to be no middle ground. You either 100% had to be the star or a failing star or whatever. And then I know so many fine, talented musicians and bands now still work day jobs.
Yeah.
It's possible these days. In the old days, there was no common ground there.
Yeah.
You either had to be all in or all out.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's just like with me personally, I mean, I've played music for, you know, since the 80s, and I, you know, made money doing it for, you know, a long time. And I've set my life up nowadays. You know, at one time I was a substance abuse counselor, did the whole 9-to-5 thing, and, you know, went to Gardner Webb, got my degree and certified substance abuse counselor and all that. But I've worked over the years to set my life up, and I think everybody in the band has, to where this is not a hobby for us. This is a way of life for us. This is what we, you know, want to do full time, if at possible, at some point down the road. But we all still have our other things that we do too. But we've set our lives up to where if we need to hit the road and go to Texas,
or you can go
the road and go to Kansas City or wherever it is, we've set our lives up to where we can do that, because this is who we are.
And that's, you know, a job isn't always who you are. It can be, but it's not always. Right. Sometimes it's just a means to an end. And so many of the road bands I've known over years, people out there playing, well, if they're not touring, they have to come home and work a job or another music job with someone else. I mean, people don't see that part, you know. They don't realize that even people that you think are pretty successful doing it are out hustling somewhere when you don't see them on stage.
Yeah.
You know, they got some other way of making income, because that income, if you're not playing, you're not making music. So yeah. I mean, yeah. So.
Well, you know, and even the big Nashville cats, you know, and you know, I know quite a few of those guys that are in Nashville now. That are, you know, going out on the road with big bands and doing that kind of thing. And when they're off the road with the big bands, they're down on Broadway.
They are.
They're in some club or,
they are,
you know, bar or something somewhere. They're still playing during the week and making money.
I mean, you have to, because it stops if you're not playing.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the – all you supplement it one way or the other.
Yeah.
I mean – you know, so
got to keep moving.
If you can find a way to make it where it's flexible and you can do the thing you love, then that's pretty much a good thing.
And this is one of those industries that you, if you've got the opportunity to make some money, you know, to go play and make some money, you better take every opportunity.
I agree.
You get, because you know, we're not getting any younger.
Nope.
And times and things change so much in the business.
They do. I mean, one day, if so many people I've known that's been in the business, and then all of a sudden, so music takes just a little bit of a change, and you're pretty well stuck. What you were doing won't work anymore. You know, you're not getting the bookings that you were getting.
Yep.
And by the same token, we've all that's listening to this have lived through COVID.
Yep.
I mean, something can shut down, as we just found out,
yep,
like that, and end everything you got going on for a while.
Mercy.
I mean,
that was rough.
No, it's rough for it was rough. Everybody. Yep. I mean,
yep. And we knew that in our own lives. You know, the toll it took on our own incomes,
yeah,
and families, and all of that, and our the momentum we had with the band.
Sure.
And all that. But the big thing for us is that we also recognize what it did to, you know, our family.
Yeah.
Friends, you
sure
know, fans, family.
Oh, yeah.
How it affected them. And, you know, people are really starting to come out now. And
but they've been slow coming back. You know,
have
you noticed that? It has been slow.
Yeah.
I think we're on the right road. I mean, I think it's coming back, but
yeah,
but it's been slow coming back.
Yeah, you know, and it's cool, you know, this spring, and especially, you know, and up to now, we're playing some of the biggest crowds that we've played for anywhere.
That's great.
At any time. I mean, so it's it's really coming back, and that's awesome. It's good to see people getting out and enjoying.
Well, and it is kind of after that. You know, it is fun to see people finally getting back to normal life and having fun again.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, music helps you get over all that time too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, music helps you get over about anything in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a big deal right there. Music definitely touches the soul and you know, stirs up emotions and
it does
things like that nothing else does. And
it's been in every culture,
yeah,
since the beginning of time. And the importance of it, I think sometimes people just do not really realize that.
Yeah.
That if you took it away, everyone would realize it quickly. But, you know,
I think that's probably one of the biggest appeals to Dirty Grass Soul is that, you know, Kevin writes all the lyrics and stuff, you know, and I mean he'll write a song at home on the acoustic guitar, and he, you know, pretty much lays it out, and then he'll bring that to us, and then we, you know, kind of shape it and mold the
sure
music into as close to what he's got in his head,
right,
as we can get.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
But Kevin is a storyteller.
He is.
And that is, I think, one of the biggest things that appeals to people is that the stories that he tells in the songs are about real life, are about day-to-day real things. And if you go and listen to the lyrics,
they are,
or, you know, pick out what he's saying in there, you know, just about everybody can relate to one way or another something in their own personal lives about the struggles and, you know, the good times and
sure
the bad and all of that stuff in those stories that he's telling. So it's about real life, and people can relate to it. And that goes a long way.
Plus, I will tell you, Kevin Dedman is one of the best front men working today.
Yeah.
I guess that kicks back to his time as doing a lot of theater stuff and all when he was in high school.
Yep.
But, you know, I see, and I'm around a lot of music. He is one of the best. Front men I know, he knows how to get a crowd involved.
Yep.
He knows how to basically work a crowd into a frenzy.
Yep.
Then you throw a fiddle in there,
mm-hmm,
and you can drive an audience crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you take some Black Sabbath and throw pedal steel and fiddle and banjo and you know, all that in there. And it's people are just blown away. They're like, my God, where did these guys come from?
Yeah,
you know? And but it, you know, every individual in the band has his own thing, you know, contribution that makes up Dirty Grass Soul as a whole. And you know, Lance with that, you know, barefooted playing on that rug all the time, and you know, just his whole antics of dancing around.
Yeah, I mean, Lance has his own thing, which is it's visual and entertaining in itself.
It is, and you know, and he plays bass like nobody's business. Yeah. I mean, you know, he does his own thing, and he doesn't sound like anybody.
No.
He doesn't look like anybody.
No.
His own deal. And everybody's like that. You know, you got Chris with that cowboy
straight
hat.
Straight up cowboy.
And those little shoulder jerks he does while he's picking that banjo, and Kevin just bouncing all over the place, wide open. You know, and then Glenn with all that classic pedal steel stuff that he works into this rock and roll, and you know, and then on the pretty stuff, you know, he's just as awesome as it can possibly be. And you know, of course, with Jared, Jared is just, you know, blows me away night after night after night with the way he plays drums and singing too.
Plus, okay, this is audio, and you don't really get to see it other than the pictures I'll post up and all, but you know, Tommy's a bit of that too. I mean, he's got his own guitar style, which if you would, you know, he's playing rock and roll basically with this band, which you would think, how does that fit? But it really does. And of course, Tommy has his own visual going on. If you know Tommy, you realize what we're talking about. But you know, his is as visual as Lance's, and they're like the two ends of the stage.
Well, you know,
and I mean that in a good way.
Well,
you realize that.
I do. Yeah, I wouldn't be a good criminal because
no, you would not
hide anywhere because you know, people are like, yeah, it's that dude with the stripe in his beard, you know.
Yep.
And but yeah, I mean, it's just I feel like I can be me. I can, you know, do whatever it is I want to do. And that's what everybody in the band does, and that's what makes Dirty Grass. So we're not trying to be anything in particular,
right,
other than me, you know, and just trying to put something in there that fits with what everybody else is doing, and trying to feel good ourselves. If I love what I'm doing, and I'm getting into it, and I'm digging this, and everybody else in the band is digging it, and everybody's into it, and you're creating that kind of energy and that emotion with each other, it is hard for the crowd not to get involved in that. You know, they get sucked right in.
They do. I mean, the crowd does play off of that.
Yeah.
I mean, crowds even know when a band's having an off night, you know, things aren't good. You can read that in a crowd.
Absolutely, yeah. And we have, you know, we have some nights that, you know, where we're just slap wore out, you know, from being on the road or what's going on. And that's the cool thing is that everybody still goes out there and tries to do their absolute best. And I think on our bad nights, for us, it's still good.
Well, yeah, and I understand that. You know, I reached a point in my life where I played a ton of music, and sometimes the act of going to play is not something I'm crazy about doing.
Yeah.
But you know, it's different once you step up there and start playing. I mean, you can wipe away most of the bad stuff that you got going on when you step up there to play.
You know it.
You know, I mean, and then you might, the minute you're through, you might think, damn, I hate to pack this stuff up and go home, you know, but that little time that you're there is a magic that, well, you'd have to be there to understand it, I guess.
Man, a couple weeks ago, we went to Tampa, down to Clearwater, Florida, and played at OCC Roadhouse Friday night. And we left on a Thursday about midnight, drove all night, got down there at 10, 11 o'clock that morning, got loaded in, set up sound check, did that whole thing, kind of chilled out for a little while, played the show that night. As soon as we got done, we jumped back in. We had a bus that night. Or that weekend, and we came on home, We had another show in Shelby that Saturday night. We didn't even go home. We came straight back, went straight to that other show, set up. We had to set up PA, you know, the whole nine yards.
Right.
Done all that. We were absolutely wore out. You know, what? I mean, just beat up. Comes time for us to play. You know, we're all kind of, excuse my French, but we're dragging ass.
Yeah.
And we go out there, and Kevin turns around, looks at Jared, and says, give me five hits. We're going into home. Jared, bam, 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 round, 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 you know.
Right.
And we bust into home is on the highway.
Yeah.
And Chris is like, diggity-diggity-diggity, you know.
Yeah, yeah, got that.
And it's like, as soon as we go, oh, yeah, and we bust into it. It's like immediately every bit of that tiredness just went away. Just, we're looking around each other. And we're like, yeah,
this is what we do. About, yeah, that's what we do. Yep.
And that's everything.
That's
the
magic. Yeah, it is.
That's the magic. You're right.
It is.
The magic.
And
you don't get that magic playing with everybody that you play with.
No,
you don't get that magic.
No, you don't.
Some people play their whole lives and never get that magic.
True, they do. They do.
We recognize that. We acknowledge that. And we are, everybody in the band is extremely grateful to be able to experience the blessings that we have been given. And I can speak for everybody when I say that, you know, everybody has a really strong faith in this band. You know, we're all believe in God and pray on a regular basis, and everybody's pretty well set in their faith, and that means a lot too. I think for me,
yeah,
it does.
Sure, right.
Know?
Yeah.
But we're very blessed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You
with
are.
What we've with what we've got, what we've been given, and what we're able to go out and do on a regular basis, and so we're extremely grateful for that.
That's great.
Yep.
Tommy, what else we need to know, bro?
What you want to know, man?
Yeah.
What you want to know?
Well, what I have gathered is you'd rather be doing this than anything that you know of.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to quit.
I've tried to quit.
It's been years ago, you know, but I got out of it for about, I guess, 6 months or so one time. I mean, I still played.
Right.
But I wasn't touring around or doing anything. This was before I was with Dirty Grass, so of course, because by gosh, I hit the ground running in Dirty Grass. So
yeah, you did.
Which,
yeah.
I kind of forced my way into Dirty Grass, so to be honest with you. But I tried to quit one time, about 6 months, and my wife just point blank told me, said, you better go back on the road playing with the band, or I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, it's a lifestyle that once you have that lifestyle, a different lifestyle is strange.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I can't say this, because when I say this, people say I'm saying stuff that, but musicians are more fun to be around than normal people. I hate to say that.
Yeah.
But once you've been a musician and you're around other people, that's the people you relate to. I mean, musicians are funny. They're creative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a lot of fun.
We're a train wreck.
Yeah, too. Oh.
You think about, you know, like most musicians that I know are, there's something wrong with them.
Well,
you know, that's what my grandpa said. Like me and you was talking earlier.
Yeah.
My grandpa said, you know, he played on the Grand Ole Opry and did all that back in the 40s and 50s. And my grandpa told me one time, he said, you know, the guy that rolls up in the Cadillac and his pants are, you know, creased just right, and he's got his rhinestone jacket on and his cowboy hat's all neat and perfect and his new strings on his guitar and all that, everything's all neat and polished and he's on time and all that, he said, that guy usually ain't gonna be worth a darn.
Yeah.
He's like, the guy you got to go cross town and drag him out from some bridge, you know, where he's been on a 3-day drunk or doing this or doing that, that usually is gonna be one of the best,
sure,
guys you ever had in your life. And, you know, that is true. It's like musicians being the creative ones like that, you know, we're generally late, we're messy.
Got quirks, got a ton of quirks.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, I've even told people certain musicians I know are quirky, and then I realize, oh crap, they're all quirky. Maybe this one's a little quirkier than the others, but to say that they're like normal everyday people would be doing them an injustice, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a stab at normal people.
It is. And
don't
you know,
a musician.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, in a lot of ways, I've tried to explain this to people. And, you know, there's been plenty of times in my life to where I wish I was a more normal person.
Yeah.
You know?
Me too. You know,
It would fit in. It would be easier to fit in. It would be easier to just live your life out.
Yeah.
I think.
I am one of those people that I don't know when to stop piling things on my plate. You know,
too much work
in life. Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm a member of Lincoln Lodge 137, you know, Freemasons Lodge. I'm the secretary at the lodge. I'm a member of the Easter Star with my wife. I'm a member of Knights of Solomon, you know, the Motorcycle Lodge, member of our York Rite. I'm a board member at 321 North Volunteer Fire Department in Lincolnton. I own a shop, you know, reupholstery shop. I play in Dirty Grass Soul. I have a side project called the Bastard Cats. Robbie Buff and Chris Wallen and Eric Taylor. And we have 8 grandchildren between me and Jenny. And, you know, I mean, there's always something. And I have a hard time in my life turning my brain off and just, you know what I mean?
I do.
Like my mind is constantly thinking about, you know, I could be sitting at you know, 321 Volunteer Fire Department. I'm up there for a board meeting. And in my mind, I'm thinking about a riff that I'm playing in a certain song. And I need to try to do it like this instead of doing it like that. Or, you know what I mean? It's like my brain is constantly clicking. And it's hard to
set it
down sometimes.
Yeah, I do understand that. I find that, too. My life is a little less complicated these days than it used to be, but it's been so complicated and full of too many activities at the same time.
Yeah.
To where sometimes when I have time, I don't exactly really know what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had times where it's like, you know, it's because I don't have much of it. When I wind up with a little bit of it, it's like, oh, what am I going to do? Yeah. You know?
My wife, you know, God bless her. She is my everything. I, you know, adore her. And she is one of those people that is always early.
Mm-hmm.
And she is neat and like well put together. And everything has its place. The house is always spotless. Everything is organized and all of that. And I just completely drive her crazy with my, you know, disheveledness, if that's even a word. And she has done a great job at corralling my disheveledness. But there are times where she's like, let's go get in the pool. Let's just go get in the pool. Let's just relax. You know, let's just chill out and relax this afternoon, not do anything. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, so, and I try.
Oh, yeah, you do it for a little bit.
Yeah. And my mind just will not shut off, you know? Yeah. And she's like, you just don't know how to chill. Like, you just cannot sit down and chill out.
Well,
no, I can't.
Well, with me being a songwriter almost ever since I could write, or a writer of one type or another, sometimes in the middle of the night, I can't sleep. If I get words in my mind, then I'm wrecked till I do them. You know, if I get an idea, then I'm wasting your time, you're wasting mine. If I got that on my mind, I may as well go do it. Doesn't matter what time of day, what time of night. If I don't, it'll drive me crazy until I do it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, yep. I mean, it's just one of those things.
I've got a little room in the back of my house where, and I do most of the work on my own guitars and, you know, changing pickups and setting them up and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I'm constantly thinking about, I need to go do this with this guitar and I need to do that with this guitar and I need to work on this riff and I need to learn this song and I need to, you know, do this and do that. I need to work on this profile and my temper, or I need to, you know, something all the time. It's like you just cannot turn that off.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to do. Yeah. It really is.
But finding some kind of balance, you know, I guess in life with that. I do struggle with that a lot. That's probably one of my biggest.
Of course, you know, that's not the worst thing you could have in the world.
You're right.
I mean.
Yeah, again, I'm blessed. I acknowledge that. I know I'm blessed. But it still sometimes is a battle myself
You know, that's what I tell people about being a musician. Everybody thinks it's such a blessing. It's kind of a curse as much as it is a blessing, you
yes,
know?
It is.
I mean,
yeah.
You know,
it is.
You know, so in your mind when you're young, I'm 70 now. You think when you get to be 70, you'd be done with this stuff? It ain't happened.
No, you can't turn it off.
You know, it's like
it's you. It's who you are.
Old man shouldn't be doing this stuff. But you know what? I'm still here doing it.
Listen,
that's a blessing, though, I guess.
Mm-hmm. My grandpa, like I said, played on Louisiana Hayride and played Renfro Valley and Grand Ole Opry.
Sure.
And did all that late 40s and early 50s. And then he got out of music, started a family, and raised, you know, his family and did a good job of that, and he was a good guy and all that. But I do believe that up until the day he died, that music was still in him. Part of him. And I think in the back of his mind, there was still always that what if kind of thing,
right,
that he carried around with him.
Yep.
Now, would he have went back and changed it? No, I think he did what he thought was the right thing to do, and
yeah,
he would have stuck with that.
Right.
But still, that was always in him.
Sure.
Still always a part of him.
Yeah, I think it is. I don't think you ever get rid of it. You might put it to rest. I mean, I've retired from the music business a number of times and tried my best to just move on and have a normal life, and it really has never really worked.
What is normal?
Yeah, well.
It's a setting on the washing machine.
Well, sometimes I wish I had that.
you're right, but that's about as best as I can describe what normal is. It's just a setting on a washing machine, huh? Other than that, I don't really know what normal is.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's like you said, a blessing and a curse.
It is.
I can't imagine what life would be like without music. I can't imagine what it would be like to not have, you know, 40 guitars and an extreme obsession and compulsion with guitars and amps and music and gigs and, you know, this,
sure,
and that and all
oh, yeah,
that.
I mean, we could sit and talk all day just about pedals.
Oh my goodness.
So I mean that's,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you just like that, the whole tone thing, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you're
oh,
never,
God, we could go about that.
Yeah, you're never satisfied. You're always trying to reach something, whatever it is, the next thing.
True.
The next thing, always.
And
that's a whole lot better than sitting around nothing.
I used to worry whether I could get, it's like, is that tone really the tone I still want to have? You know, I mean, or is it dated? You know, I mean, I don't know. So you could do that forever.
Yeah, but you know, the older I get, and I think, you know, I think a lot about this recently in my life. I lost my daddy in 2018, and then I lost my little brother this past August. And, you know, watching, you know, like my mom and my father-in-law, and saw what my daddy went through in life with cancer and Agent Orange, you know, all that. You know, getting old ain't for sissies. That's
no, God, Lord.
But I think about, like, my daddy, you know, struggled all his life, and but he was probably one of the strongest, and my mama for sure, the strongest people that I ever knew, you know, and I don't think there's anything in this world that could be thrown at my mama that she couldn't handle.
Right.
You know, my daddy, I thought the same way, you know, like they're almost bigger than life, you know what,
right,
I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And to move into a phase in life where you see those, you know, huge people in your life, strongest people that there are, age start to take its toll, health,
yeah,
issues start to take its toll.
Oh,
And you start to move into the phase of life where you become the caregivers and caretakers of some of those people, and you know you start to do things for them, and you see, you know, the problems that they're having and all that, it's an eye-opening place to be in life.
Oh, like, it
that's
is.
That's going to be me.
Sure it is.
One day, and though that day's probably not that far away. So I think a lot about that nowadays, and I think to myself, you know, whatever there is in this life that I have left that's out there for the taking, you better get out there and do it.
I agree.
You better get out there and keep moving, putting one foot in front of the other, keep striving to do better, and try to do everything that we can do to better our own lives and our families' lives and be a part of our communities and do all that.
Because, sure.
You know, the world's not becoming a better place.
No, it's
by
not.
No means. Things are getting worse and worse by the day. And but I think, you know, it's up to us individually to do our part.
To try to make it a better place.
Try to make it better.
Yeah,
for ourselves, for our families, for each other, for our communities. You know, and that's one of the reasons, like, I'm a part of the things that I'm a part of, is to try to help make some kind of a difference.
Sure.
For other people, too. You know,
yeah, I agree.
I've been blessed, and there are lots of people out there that's not as blessed as I am. And if there's anything that I can do to try to make the world a little bit better for them too, I would like to be able to do that. You know, at
that's
some
a good
point,
quality.
You're going to leave a legacy behind. And I think it comes down to what kind of legacy, what do you want to be remembered for?
Yeah.
What legacy are you leaving behind?
Yeah.
That's a big question.
Well, that's always a big question.
Huge.
You know, what will you be remembered for?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it bothers me a lot. I think about my daddy and my brother, you know, because that stuff is very fresh on my mind, what I saw my brother and my daddy go through and what I've seen that do to my mama and my family. And so I want something better for me and what I can do for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I love, you know, my daddy did what he could do with the tools that he'd been given in his life, and my brother did as well, and they made good positive impacts on lots of people. And I don't think that they realized the positive impacts that they made on a lot of people, and kind of got trapped in the little world that they were in. And you know, I just want to try to spread some kind of a message that there's more out there. There's more available. You can accomplish.
There's always.
You can do a whole lot more. And if that even makes any sense, what I just said.
Well, but, there's always more if you're willing to open your mind and learn. There's always more.
Yeah.
And you know, I've kind of learned with people, everybody has a bad day.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not going to. I'm a pretty open with the fact that everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has bad days. If you continue to have them, then of course there's problems. But
yeah. But
you know, I'm pretty easy with people because I'm human and I've had a ton of my share of stuff. You know,
man, I've had so. You know, I got clean and sober when I was 22 years old. And I went to a detox facility and stayed there for about 3 weeks and got out of there and started going to 12-step meetings, NA and AA meetings.
But you did what you needed to do.
I've been clean and sober for about 26 years now, and I've been clean and sober longer than I used.
That's great.
But, you know, and I was a substance abuse counselor. I went to Gardner-Webb, got my degree, become a certified substance abuse counselor, did all that for years and years and years. And my daddy had a lot of issues with substance abuse, and of course that's what my brother passed away from, and at 44 years old.
Sure, I did.
And it's one of those things where, you know, I tried to help both of them. I wanted to be a positive influence and tried to do what I could do to help them. And you know, sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't. You know,
and I think it's the effort.
Yeah,
it's not so much the end result as the effort that was put in there.
Yeah,
because sometimes you can't. I mean, sometimes it requires you can do all you can do, but they have to do their part too. And sometimes they aren't strong enough. It's, you know, it's not that they're bad. Sometimes they just can't do it, you know?
Yeah, my brother struggled with that, you know, for several years after my daddy passed away, and he just, I don't know what it was, he just couldn't grasp a hold of the whole recovery concept, or
maybe
he wasn't
can't.
Open to it at all. I don't know, but he just we tried, and I just couldn't get to him. And of course, you know, we'll live out the rest of my life thinking maybe I should have done something different or better or whatnot. But now all I can do is use all of that, try to use it in a positive way to reach out to other people, or if I see somebody struggling,
sure.
or whatnot, to try to at least be there if they need to talk, or, you know,
make the effort anyway.
Just try, yeah. You know, and sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. You know,
true.
When being spread as thin as sometimes we are spread, it's hard.
It is
to
hard.
Manage all of that. And I think
sometimes it's hard to manage your own life enough to help somebody
mercy.
Else. You know,
mercy. That's probably, like I said before, that's probably my biggest thing is trying to manage everything that I've got going on, and trying to be a part of. It's all for some kind of positive reason, but a lot of times it's like, man, I just need to take a nap.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the easy thing.
So music is the outlet.
Sure.
Is the number one outlet. You know, I love riding my motorcycles, I love going shooting guns, I love doing all that good old stuff, you know, but to have a really terrible day or whatever, and to go and get on stage with these guys and make some music and watch people's faces light up and people dance around, and I mean people from 5 years old to 80.
Yeah, y'all do reach a wide audience. Yeah.
Or to just go sit down in my house and pick up an acoustic and just sit there and tinker for a little while.
Sure.
Just, you know, playing over some stuff or whatnot. It really genuinely does the soul good.
It does. I would tell you that a guitar for me, or any of the other instruments I play, have been both sometimes my best friend, maybe my only friend, and maybe even my therapist, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, I don't know that I would be as well in life if I hadn't had music in it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it saved me many times for myself.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tommy, this has been a lot of fun, brother.
Dude, I've enjoyed it, you know?
Thank you for coming and do this.
I didn't even, you know, I don't know when particularly the mic was on and when the mic was off, but the whole before, during, and after is awesome.
Been fun. It's been fun, hasn't it?
And I appreciate it, yeah.
We need to do this again sometime.
I hope we do, for
all
sure.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Odyssey, make the Hall of Fame, come on.